To the Earl Ingram Show. As always, you can join us at 844-967-2789. That's 844-967-2789. Text us at that same number as we await a conversation that we're going to be having with a Supreme Court candidate, Judge Everett Mitchell. I wanted to talk about, for a couple of minutes, the train derailment in near Ohio, on the Pennsylvania border, and what is taking place in East Palestine, and any of us where we live. I remember when they used to not be able to carry those chemicals over the land, over the rails, and I'm old enough, I've been around long enough to remember when that debate came into existence. And one of the reasons why communities were opposed to all the black tankers that you see over the railroad tracks, they're everywhere. And there was a time when that wasn't happening in our lifetime because the people were opposed to it. They were afraid that if something happened, the damage that it would do to them. And there was a time in this country when that was not allowed. And I remember the debates that took place and the corporations that, again, bought out the elected officials to make it possible for these kinds of things to take place. And sure enough, there have been many derailments that have taken place in this country and have caused major damage to so many people and their lives. And when you look at the damage that has been done, immeasurable, in East Palestine, the people asked, can we talk to the train company about what we are feeling, sore throats, runny noses. We know that something occurred here that is the fish dying, that is going to impact us and our lives long term. And so the railroad company said yes until the people showed up. And when the people showed up, the railroad company didn't show up. Norfolk Southern backed out. And they backed out because they knew they are going to be liable for many deaths, probably for decades to come. They burned off all of those chemicals. And that stuff ran into the streams, soaked into the land. And so they don't want to accept what they've caused. Again, we in this country fail to understand that sometimes our worst enemy are our elected officials. I remember when they agreed to all of that. You know, our forefathers and our fathers didn't allow that. But, you know, the money got too good for some elected officials who made it possible. And we see it. All of us see it wherever we live. We see those trains going through our neighborhoods, through our communities. Every time I'm here in Waukesha, I see the tracks inside of the downtown, and you see those things going across. At any point in time, there could be an accident. We don't know what's going on. We don't know, and the people here don't know what's in those tankers. But we know whatever it is, it's not for humans to be exposed to. But there's money to be made. And so this is what happens. And those poor people in East Palestine who know that their lives have been altered forever are going to continue to suffer. And their children and their children's children are going to wind up with all of these different maladies. And the railroad company is going to pay pennies on a dollar because they'll be allowed to do that, even though they have impacted and affected people's lives for generations to come. This is one of the major things that I constantly talk about in this country, and people aren't willing to talk about. When word spread that residents affected by a massive train derailment could voice concerns and frustrations directly to transport company, to transport company Norfolk Southern Wednesday evening, the village showed up by the hundreds. East Palestine High School was more packed than one resident had ever seen, more than any significant basketball game ever. But immediately before the event, Mayor Trent Conway told reporters that his residents wouldn't get an opportunity to question the rail company involved in the February 3rd incident. The mayor told his residents that Norfolk Southern backed out of the open house meeting, escalating tensions in the already packed and loud school. Let's go to Gary from Sussex. Good morning, Gary. What's going on?
Hey, you know, it is, it's a shame, and I agree with you. My wife and I were waiting for a train the other day. This is after the derailment, and my wife was saying, what do you think's in these round ones here? I said, well, there's gas or oil or some type of chemicals, you know? And to me, I'm sitting there thinking, oh, my God, you know, we're right by the tracks here. If that thing derailed, those things will land right on top of us, let alone, you know, explode and everything else. So I kind of agree with you. I think it's awfully dangerous bringing these things on the rails. And from what I understand, why it derailed was one of the bearings on one of the wheels froze up and broke off and it went off the track.
Whatever the reason is, Gary, the fact of the matter is there was a time in your and my lifetime that they didn't allow that to happen. They didn't allow that kind of chemical and those kind of poisons to travel across the tracks into cities and endanger the lives of people.
And the thing is, you know what was really weird was this train had an engine right in the middle of the train going. So it was pushing, and this engine was on. So it was, this train was something like 150 cars long, had a single engine in the middle pushing this thing and pulling behind, you know?
Well, and the
so
fact,
that was really a... Go ahead.
And the fact that once it derailed, they and the fireball erupted, they had no choice but to burn up all the other chemicals, man. You know?
Go ahead,
quickly.
Okay, so then I was listening to these people talking, and they said, oh, yeah, the EPA, they all said everything is fine. You come back to your houses. Their pets are dying. The people have rashes on their faces. They said, oh, the water's fine. And they're telling that it's ready to drink it. Now, to me, they're crazy. They're telling these people it's okay to drink the water. That water's going to be contaminated down for...
That's what happens in America.
Yeah, well...
Yeah, that's what happens, man.
Yeah, well, it's going to be, like you said, it's going to impact for years and years. The children, the people, the animals, everybody is going to be impacted.
Hey, Gary, thank you very much for the call. Let's go to Ron quickly from Milwaukee. Quickly, Ron.
Okay, quickly. When I was a newspaper reporter back in the mid-70s, I wrote a three-part investigative series in the Milwaukee Sentinel about, and it was called Caution Chemical Cargo, and it was all about trains going through populated areas, towns and cities, carrying hazardous cargo and what happened when something went wrong. And I can't remember all the details, but I can tell you that none of them were as dramatic as this one. But that doesn't matter because we don't know how much harm was done because this point of the series was there was very little knowledge, information given out or knowledge. Everybody just said, you know, we're going to trust, unless there's a fireball, we're going to trust what the railroad said.
Yes.
More recently, there are freight trains that go through the south side of Milwaukee. One within on a high trestle across from the fourth floor of an apartment building, and they carry hazardous cargo. And that trestle, and this has been reported.
Hey Ron,
is in poor condition.
Hey Ron, do me a favor, mate. Leave your number with Calvin. Okay, leave your number with Calvin. I want to call you afterwards. Okay.
Okay.
All right. Leave your number. Listen, we got to go to a break. 8449-672-7889. Welcome back to the Earl Ingram Show. As always, you can join us at 844-967-2789. You can text us at that same number. My guess is the Honorable Judge Everett Mitchell, who is a candidate for the State Supreme Court. Hey, good morning to you, Judge Mitchell. How you doing, sir?
Hey, man, I'm so good to be back with you, Brother Ingram. Thank you so much.
Man, it's good to have you back on the air. And look, man, it's 5 days out, huh?
Yeah, 5 days out, man. Many months of hard, consistent work, plus many years of dedicated service to Wisconsin. Hopefully that's been a recipe that allows for us to find success to get us past that primary and on to the April election. We're going to make history, Black history.
Yeah, I think it's important for people to understand that there's been over $3 million raised.
Yeah.
A record. What are your thoughts? Because you're not sitting at the top of the heap with that.
No. I think there's always the money that is being poured into these races kind of underscores the ways in which I think judicial races have now become political as well. And for the many Wisconsinites that I've talked to around the state, it makes the judicial branch seem nothing more than another Senate race, a governor race, which weakens, I think, the credibility of our court systems because it comes down to about money and TV ads and all the different ways in which it really rips away that nonpartisan label that courts really should be able to have in order for people to feel comfortable that we're administering justice.
You know, Judge Mitchell, it has frustrated me to no end to watch all of the money that, and people aren't giving money, these major, you know, donations that are coming in, they expect something in return, right?
Well, I think they definitely are supporting a perspective, yes. So you know, as you know, Dan Kelly will, you know, talk about a reliable conservative voice and those who support this idea of, you know, a consistent voting bloc. And the criticism that has happened with Justice Hagedorn has really been that, you know, he's not consistently doing what they wanted or expected him to be able to do. And so, you know, when in reality, he's doing what justice isn't supposed to do, which
right.
is to look at the facts, look at the law, and look at the implications of the decisions based on the historical leanings of it. And sometimes you one way and sometimes it moves another way. So I think we've gotten away from this idea of judges doing their job to, you know, being reliable votes for individuals that are, you know, funneling money. And I'm not saying that's all case, but I can definitely say that it is just very interesting that the money being poured in is really weakening, I think, the people around our state's capacity to see the Supreme Court as an independent judicial body that can't be swayed by outside influences.
You know, for those of you who are just joining us on the line, Judge Everett Mitchell, he is a candidate for the state Supreme Court. And, you know, Judge Mitchell, from the first time you and I met, I knew there was something special about you, and it's why I've attempted to have you on as many times as I can.
And hopes, I appreciate it.
Well, but I've had responses from people who are listening who mention our conversations, and you are having some impact in this listening audience across the state because they hear clearly from you a person who clearly is independent from Pat Grew, and a self-made man who understands. Let's talk about the what it is you see as a vision for what the Supreme Court is and should be, and what it's not.
Yeah, for your listeners, one of the things that it's an old book called Blocking the Courthouse Door. It's a book that I read a long time ago when I was in grad school at Princeton. And it was one of those books where it talked about how courts were being targeted as places for, and this at this time it was more about corporate, you know, lawsuits and medical malpractice suits. But they had a strategy in there where they always talked about ways in which they wanted to be able to influence the decisions that were made by putting people in state positions of courts, circuit courts, and Supreme Courts, so that they have an anticipated ruling. So this strategy, in many ways, is not a new strategy. It has been, it's an ancient strategy that has been used in multiple states across our country. And so my vision for our court is to go back to a place like Justice Abrahamson had, Shirley Abrahamson, like this idea that the courts can be a part of the state of the community and be able to try to work to resolve some of the things that impact courts and the judges that are serving their communities. So it's a vision of being in schools, a vision of working together in collection on committees to look at some of the bigger issues that are happening around our state that impact so many Wisconsinites, like opiate abuses in our community, and what are the services, mental health. I have to applaud the Chief Justice that she just sent out an email trying to convene a group to talk about mental health. I applaud that, but that's the kind of work that we could be doing and should have been doing around mental health, juvenile crime, juvenile services, to pull the right minds together so that we can lead our state in a very different direction. I mean, Brother Ingram, when we met, I was at the community brainstorming, and, you know, I started to tell people, you know, we've seen a 47% reduction in juvenile car thefts in Dane County because we've adopted a different approach. Saying that to your group and to the group of the community brainstorming that day was eye-opening because, you know, so many people are suffering in our urban centers with trying to come up with the right strategy that will allow for the futures of our young people to be secure.
Judge Mitchell, hang on.
That's the vision.
Yeah, we've got to go to a break.
I know we've got to pay the bills.
Yeah, 844-967-2789. We'll be right back. If you need a friend, call me.
God's only sky. Imagine all the people living for today. Imagine there's no country.
All right, welcome back to the Earl Ingram Show. As always, you can join us at 844-967-2789. That's 844-967-2789. You can text us at that same number. My guess is the Honorable Judge Mitchell. He's a candidate for the state Supreme Court. You know, Judge Mitchell, I think people don't really understand the importance of the Supreme Court, either on the state or the national level. Let's talk a little bit about why this is. And the Supreme Court is so important.
Well, I think it goes back to, I don't insult anybody when I say this, but it's two things, Brother Ingram. One, it goes back to kind of civics lessons, right? That civic education. I was in the barbershop yesterday just talking to some, you know, black men, and we were talking about this very issue, is how do we translate that into the how people can understand. And one thing we all kind of agreed to is just civics in general. You know, when do we learn about the three branches of government and the implications of those three branches of government in our own daily life. So that's one. And then, so how do we teach that? Where are we being teaching that? I told the guys yesterday, I said, you know, back in the day, that's why they used to call it Sunday school. Cause not only did you used to learn about the Bible, but you would learn about your civic lesson at the same time.
Right.
That's where I learned it from my Sunday school teacher, all about black history and stuff that we didn't get in school was always supplemented by the stuff we learned, by the information we were taught in churches. And then secondly, Brother Ingram, I can honestly tell you, man, the idea of a court system is that many people don't even think that it can change to reflect anything that's fair. And so when I was in the grocery store the other day, I saw, you know, I was just talking to people, and I saw, you know, a black mother, she got three babies, she had a $20 bill, and she's trying to pay for food.
No.
And she's trying to figure out how to pay for, you know, food for three kids with $20. Yeah. And it gets up to 17, like it's like 17, 19, and then she hands the man, you know, a carton of eggs, and then when he rings up, it's at a gas station, it's like $8.99.
Yeah.
And you could just see her tears, Brother Ingram. And so I just told her, I said, you know what, this on me, because I'm not going to have you struggling about, you know, babies and none of right. that stuff. Just go away. I got this. And then she was like, you sure? I was like, I ain't tell I was a judge. I ain't tell I was running. I said, you trying to feed your babies. I can pay for this. Go ahead. You should be good. But, you know, the reality is that when people paying $8.99 for a carton of eggs and trying to feed three children with $20, the importance of a Supreme Court is hard to translate in those real moments, you know?
Right.
So that's why we think we just have to keep, you know, hitting the ground, trying different ways to let them know how important it is. I even did like this little, one of my friends did a rap video for me that we just released on our Instagram and social media feeds just to give people to think about a different way to see justice in pictures, even if they can't understand it in words.
Judge Mitchell, I've been around a little while. And
I thought you were just 27.
You might have to flip those numbers around shortly. But but the truth of the matter is, the longer I live, the less I believe in, unfortunately, what the nation stands for and where it's headed. And mm-hmm. and everybody can see that, right? I mean, you really can see when money is the number one arbiter of everything.
Yeah.
And if you don't have any money, then we live in a nation that totally ignores the people who don't have any money.
Yep.
And so even at the Supreme Court level, where you think that that's exactly where justice should come from in the end, you just don't even see a possibility in that. And it doesn't matter, unfortunately, Judge Mitchell, whether it's Democrat or Republican sometimes. What has happened to this nation?
Yeah, ever since Citizens United, which is when people ask you, like, what, why is this stuff important? You know, Citizens United was the one that opened the door for all these monies to come into these races. You know, a Supreme Court race back in 2003 at most cost $37,000. At most. You know, now they're talking about upwards of, you know, $10, $15 million being poured into, you know, to own this seat.
Right.
I mean, that is just an astronomical amount of money to come in to pay for ads, to sway voters one way or the other. And the good thing about me not receiving all of that is that it does give me an opportunity to say to people, like, listen, you know, I'm not bought on, I'm not being bought. I'm not being, you know, nobody's putting in that money to influence me. I'm being very consistent with my message of independence and balance and following the law and actually having some results that have impacted the everyday lives of Wisconsinites. So that is what we want. That's what my hope and my heart is trying to get us back to. Get back to a place where we can have full-blown conversations. Your listeners should know, like, there are no forums. Like, you're literally going to go before a primary, and there has not been significant forums among any candidates. You know, I keep showing up, and, you know, my progressive side, she doesn't show up. And, you know, I'm like, how are people making a decision about who is the best when nobody's sitting down for any more debates?
You know.
No more forums.
You know, that's why I say, you know, Democrat or Republican, because what has happened in your race on the progressive side of things is she's been selected before she can be elected, right?
Mm-hmm. Yeah,
people have selected Judge Janet Protasiewicz. And so that's enough because the people with money, you know, selected her. And that's not the way any of this is supposed to work. I mean, it's supposed to be up to the voters. And for the life of me, Judge Mitchell, I don't understand why the voters don't push back on all of this, because unless the voters push back on all of this, this is never going to change.
Yeah. And I would say me running, Brother Ingram, was, you know, I knew all the money people were saying what they were saying. But I'm like, you know, a bunch of, you know, consultants don't get to tell Wisconsin who they can and cannot elect.
Yes.
And so I've been running, and that's why I've been running, to say our state deserves a choice. It deserves to have an option and not be force fed with the choices that some consultants make in rooms, and they evaluate who can and who cannot, you know, ascend to the opportunity to represent our state. So that's why I've been pushing through this whole time.
So do you think, Judge Mitchell, as you've gone through this now and continue to go through this, knowing even going in what this was going to be, but yet you have been steadfast and fighting, David against Goliath battle, that, you know, after the end of all of it, you've learned something.
Yeah, well, what I've learned is that pretty much what you just articulated is, you know, there is this sense that, you know, money comes in, they determine who we have the responsibility and opportunity to vote for, and then it moves in that direction. All I wanted the voters of our state, I don't care, you know, all the stuff that's happened throughout this race, what I am most consistent with is that our state deserves a choice. And, you know, they deserve a choice between, you know, someone who can articulate what they have accomplished for our state, what they have done for people, because I believe that is the foundation that you must lay before, you know, you give somebody power to represent you on another level. Because it makes sense. You know, the best predictor of future behavior is past behavior. And if people have not committed themselves, progressive, Republican, if they've not committed themselves to benefiting all types of people, then why do you want to elevate them to a space that's supposed to be nonpartisan, where they're going to work for the best? I'm the one candidate that's not running around here attacking both sides, because I recognize at the end of the day, that justice is blind for a reason, because you don't want to see people as labels or partisan or blue or red. You want to be able, as a judge, to evaluate the facts that are in front of you and law, and let that be the standard that you argue from. All this other stuff makes us, it weakens the integrity of a court. And I promise you, as black people, I know people not always attuned to that, but as black people, we use the integrity of the court to transform the democracy that we have available to us today. That is what we've always done. And if that is weakened, and if that is seen as a place that has been compromised, I don't know where we build foundations of hope for the future of our generations.
You know, Judge Mitchell, man, the reason that I am so in love with you and what it is you are presenting is because to not be able to have debates, right? I mean, if at some point in time, the back of that has to be broken, right? Because historically, it doesn't bode well for any democracy. Let's stop talking and playing like we've got this great democracy. You know, because it doesn't exist. If people can keep making determinations on who should be where in our elective processes without that happening by the people themselves, what is it then, Judge Mitchell? Then what are we dealing with? And if people don't see that now, and by now, man, I hate to even think about the years to come. At some point in time, the back of that has to be broken. And
I agree with you.
And hopefully, you know, we can begin to do that now in this race. Because
go
ahead.
If our people vote, if it, you know, Wisconsinites hear this message and it resonates and they tell 10-15, they say this is the different approach, you know, and I've made myself available to anybody who wants to question me.
You know what I'm saying?
Whatever form you want, whatever you want, whoever wants to invite me, whoever wants to talk, whether you can consider yourself conservative, liberal, my phone number is available to everybody because I just believe that everybody should have the right to have these hard questions answered, you know. And it doesn't have to be friendly. I can go into, you know, hostile rooms and have conversations about things that people want to talk about. And that is what I want to. That's what I choose to prioritize in this process.
You know, Judge Mitchell. Some of us have seen the changes at the Supreme Court level in the state, here in the state for over the last, 10-12 years. And it hasn't been good, right? Just like on the national level. And so everybody knows there's something that's not right. I don't care if you're a Democrat, Republican, you know this is not the way it's supposed to be, that these people have already selected who these people should be. Hold on a second, Judge Mitchell. We got to go to break. We'll be right back.
But I'm not the only one. I hope someday you'll join us, and the world will live us. Sitting in the morning sun, I'll be sitting when the evening comes, watching the ships roll in, and then I'll watch them roll away again. Yeah, I'm sitting on the dock of the bay, watching the tide roll away.
All right, welcome back to the Earl Ingram Show. As always, you can join us at 844-967-2789. That's 844-967-2789. My guest is the Honorable Judge Everett Mitchell, who is a candidate for the state Supreme Court. You know, Judge Mitchell, when you made a decision to run for this position, number one, before I go there, people don't know your credentials, and maybe people are enamored with credentials, and maybe they say, well, where did he go to school? What are his credentials? You want to, can you chime in a little bit on that? I know you don't want to toot your own horn, but I think where you went to school, your credentials are critically important.
All right. So I went to graduate from Morehouse College with 2 degrees in mathematics and religion. At Morehouse, I was a top-ranking religious senior in my department, which was a lot because where I came from, we've talked about in this show, from even being homeless my last semester at Morehouse, I was a Benjamin Elijah Mays scholar because I was a math major and I was going to be a math teacher as well. And then I went to Princeton Theological Seminary, and there I had 2 master's degrees. I was actually awarded the Jane Swoops Award for Ethics and given a presidential scholarship for Princeton because of my academic commitment that I had at Morehouse. And so I did that and graduated with like a 3.8 from Princeton. And then I went to go get a 2nd master's degree where I work with a Professor Stackhouse, Max Stackhouse, and I also work with Dr. Cornel West and Eddie Glaude, and got exposed to African-American intellectual traditions. So I wrote for them and got one of the highest grades that Dr. Stackhouse had given when I wrote my thesis for Princeton. And then after I graduated from there, I went to UW-Madison Law School, where I as a single father, working a full-time job, I got on Law Review. And Law Review is a very special group that gets accepted in law school. So I got on Law Review, and in between Princeton and UW, I co-edited a book with a friend of mine called Breaking Silent, Pastoral Approaches to Creating an Ethos of Peace. And I've written and been published in 2 AME journals that really look at the role of religion and democracy. And so even after UW, I've given, thousands of talks on classes related to race, racism, and the law. So I was able to pull together a course to teach at the law school and teach law school students on race, racism, and the law course, as well as to teach Juvenile Justice Administration. And, I'm the first African-American to run our juvenile division here in Dane County. So being in this position allows me to have administrative responsibilities and duties for our entire judicial, our system here. And so it's not just that I just do juvenile cases. I'm responsible for the administration of how we move these cases through our entire system, working with our human services colleague, our social workers, DAs, prosecutors, public defenders, and community resources to bring better opportunities. And because of that, I've been awarded, the Dr. Martin Luther King Award. I've been recognized by the Madison Black Chamber. I've been recognized in the State Journal several times for my work. Even, I have a blending of support between grassroots organizations as well as institutional organizations for my consistent and dedicated commitment to justice in our community.
So in these last few minutes, make the appeal to the audience.
I would say that I've said to our entire state that justice is not what you say, it's what you do. My heart and my commitment for justice is rooted in what I believe our state Supreme Court should make sure is manifested, and that is justice. When we have used the law has been a benefit to many communities because we are able to see it used in a manner that moves our state and our country forward. And Wisconsin is at a critical place where it not only needs a diversity of color, but also needs a diversity of experiences. And that's the key, Wisconsin, is that do we have a diversity of experiences that can lead our state to resolve some of the most complex, nuanced issues in our communities, while also providing us with someone who understands the rule of law and has committed or stands on justice and fairness and actually has done leadership roles in our community. So I'm just a different type of judge. But right now, with all the division and all the partisanship and all the pulling apart, we need a different vision. And I'm that walking vision for our state that has worked on both sides to make sure that we're advancing our state and not allowing myself to be pulled into middle school characterizations or arguments, when at the end of the day, it is about justice, it is about our community, it's about our children. Brother Ingram, last night, I know I got to go, but last night I had a wonderful time at Coffee Makes You Black, and I was able to take my black robe, my judicial robe, and put it on this little six-year-old boy who had been through so much in his little young life already. And if you could have seen the smile on his face when I put that robe on and zipped it up, I mean, it was electric. The whole place lit up because he was like, oh, my goodness, this is, and I'm like, this is a judge telling you in your little six-year-old mind that you are important enough for me to come here at Coffee Makes You Black, take my judicial robe, put it on you, and let you know that this is your future, and we're going to work hard to make sure you have it. That is who I am, that is what I bring to
you. You know, Judge Mitchell, I hate I couldn't make it last night. I had a different engagement, but I will say this to you. I'm going to bring you back again next week, and prayers are going to go up and continue to go up because you're the right guy for the right time. And people who may question and who didn't know the credentials that you have, but it's not about your credentials, man. It's about who you are. It's about the kind of person you are, the commitment that you've made in your life to people, and the fact that to overcome adversity and all those things. And to me, a person who's sitting in that seat should have those kind of life experiences. At least one person who's sitting in those seats should have those kind of life experiences. And that's why I just got to support you, man.
Thank you so much, Brother Andrew. I appreciate you.
All right. We'll talk next week. Thank everybody who made the show go. Thank all of you for listening. Man, thank you, Calvin. And I'll be back on tomorrow. Look out for the snow. You've been tuned into the Earl Ingram Show. See you tomorrow.